It's a pleasure now for me to introduce my colleague, Almandina Cicinova from the National Science Foundation, Computer and Information Sciences and Engineering Directorate.
It is my pleasure to announce our next session on file systems and your interest in research. And our moderator for this session is Dr. Gary Grider, who is now Deputy Division Leader, HPC Division at Los Alamos National Lab. He's also a chair of the High-End Computing Intergovernment Working Group, File Systems and I.O. Technical Advisory Group. And
thank you. So we'll have another hour and a half panel, and I want to go ahead and introduce who the speakers will be after myself. First will be Garth Gibson. He'll be talking after me, and mostly about reliability or lack thereof. And failure data release and some other interesting things. And then Henry Newman of Instrumental, he's back there in back of the table. He'll be talking about the need for standards in the ILM space, which is a growing problem inside the government and inside the commercial sector. And then we'll listen to Bob Rogers, who's over there against the wall, and he's our resident SNEA ILM person, and he's going to tell us about the state of ILM within the SNEA world and in the commercial community. And then we'll have a discussion. So if you'll hold all your questions until the end, and then we'll have another question and answer. So first I'll talk a little bit about Los Alamos, and then I'll go into the high-end computing file systems and I.O. effort that we have going and have had going for about 3 years now, which I think has been very successful. First, a little tour of history at Los Alamos. Here's some pictures of machines and people that are pretty important for our history. The middle picture is actually John von Neumann and Nicholas Metropoulos having a conversation, probably about Monte Carlo, I would guess. and these are some of the machines we've had in the past. I call this the kilo, mega and giga scale era. And you can see that we've had a large number of machines of various flavors over the years. And then along comes the ASCII program in the mid-90s, and Los Alamos, Livermore, and Sandia, the NNSA labs, started heading towards teraflop and beyond. And Sandia actually ushered in the teraflop era in the early 90s. and, there was a rush to get to 100 teraflops for some weapons calculations that we needed to do inside the weapons complex. This is a picture of a few of the machines that were involved in getting, to the 100 teraflops, and now we're off on another adventure to petaflops and beyond. And as of this week, actually, I didn't really plan this. I didn't know when that was going to happen, but there has been a sustained petaflop actually occur this week. It was 1.4 petaflops peak, and 1.00-something-26 petaflops sustained, something like 75% efficient, with less than 3 megawatts, actually less than 2.5 megawatts of power, which is pretty amazing. And that was a couple of days ago, so you probably have seen something in the Wall Street Journal or New York Times about it. It was a machine called Roadrunner. That's actually a picture of a Roadrunner.
It's your machine.
It's Los Alamos' machine, and actually it's an interesting architecture. It uses a variant of the Cell chip, which is used in the Sony PlayStation, to get the floating point capability. So anyway, it'll be loaded up on something like 25 trucks and sent to Los Alamos in the next few weeks, and we'll hook it up there and start doing science with it instead of silly LINPACK stuff. Oh, by the way, there's two applications that have achieved beyond 400 teraflops with BLabs, not LINPACK. So that's a pretty interesting thing, too. So beyond that, the NNSA complex has sort of two forks in the road for how it wants to do computing, and one of the forks is the New Mexico half of NNSA, and this is sort of a quick view of the roadmap of the machines in that side of NNSA, and there's a machine probably going to be doing next year called Zia, around 2 petaflops. And you can see the kinds of numbers that we have to deal with. But in interest here, the 1 terabyte per second of I.O. capability is a very interesting number. That's the first time we've ever been in that space. 20 petabytes of data and so forth, and hopefully all less than 8 megawatts. And then out a little bit further into the future, there's maybe 3 years, 4 years down the road, there's 50 petaflop kind of machine on the drawing board. And you can see that we're now up at the 10 terabytes per second range. So we're headed towards really, really large numbers. Of course, I said that a decade ago, and 2 decades ago, actually. So anyway, why do I care about this high-end computing file systems and I.O. effort that's going on? And it's driven by those roadmaps. It's driven by that past. Many terabytes a second, hundreds of thousands to millions of even of I.O. operations per second. Millions of processes is not that far away, probably in a year, maybe less. Millions to billions of files in a directory could happen to us, which would, be awful right now. Trillions of files in a file system is certainly not going to be unheard of at all, and tens to hundreds of thousands of disk drives is not that unheard of. In fact, it's there today. And then huge archives that are even in the hundreds of gigabytes per second will be required. So we're sort of gearing up for all this, but one of the things that we needed to do was to attack this from many fronts, from the engineering front for what we build on a day-to-day basis at the labs, and also from a research and development front. And that's what the HEC FSIO effort is about. So back a few years ago, the Japanese built the world's fastest supercomputer and scared us all to death. And I'm not real sure why that scared us so bad, but it seemed to. We had this large workshop in Washington. Dan Reed ran it. And basically it was a big question of, why did that happen and what should we do about it? And the upshot of it was a really good outcome, and that is that instead of just, putting money out and hoping things come together, maybe we should try to coordinate things better so that the money goes further and it's a better thing for the government to coordinate the R&D efforts or at least better than they had been done in the past. And so that's sort of where this HEC effort came from, is let's coordinate the research and development efforts in the high-end computing community to get more for our money. And so that's sort of the genesis of it. One of the first things that happened out of that was this file systems and I.O. effort was formed as one of the early pilots for can we really coordinate these R&D efforts throughout the government. And so we've tried really hard over the last 3 years to see if this would work, and I think it's working to some extent. So basically, 3 years ago, we had the first workshop, and we split ourselves up into 8 categories. These are the categories: metadata, measurement, understanding, and so forth. And we basically did a gaps analysis that said what research is required in these areas that isn't already being done by somebody out in the community, and which research is overlapped. So, are there things, people that are doing things that are overlapped with one another? And from that, essentially, begat many things. One was the first HEC year call for file systems and I.O., which the National Science Foundation did for us. And that essentially took that gaps document and turned it into a solicitation and said we want to do solicit research in these areas in general. And that ended up being about 23 awards, I think. And in the $10 to $15 million range after it was all said and done. Plus, there's been 2 or 3 CPA calls from the National Science Foundation, and those are coordinated in this effort as well, so that we coordinate research and development funded out of that pool as well as the HEC Europe pool. So the whole thing right now, not counting this year's CPA, is 29 projects and $15 million roughly of awards. And it's in its third year now, so that's good. Additionally, the DOE has the CIDAC program, and the CIDAC program grew significantly in the IO and file systems area, and that was, you know, largely due to the outcry from this community. And so something like $25 million over 5 years will be spent on institutes and centers doing IO and file systems and storage type research, mostly in two centers, the Scientific Data Management Center, which is Ari Shoshone runs at Berkeley, and then the Petascale Data Storage Institute that Garth runs. And Garth will tell you about that hopefully in his slides a little bit, at least some. Also simulation resources. So people can't do research and development without assistance. Not everybody has their own personal 20,000 processor machine to do research with. So we've tried to make resources available through the DOE's Insight program and the NSF infrastructure programs to provide storage and compute resources and network resources to people to be able to do meaningful file systems and IO research. We try to help coordinate that. Additionally, the DOD NSA has a program for incubating research and ideas into product, and that's called the ACS program, and roughly $1 million will be spent on IO in that area, and there's a follow-on BAA that's about to come out for all you university people out there for some more awards. Some of them may end up being in the IO area, and so we help try to coordinate that. And then additionally, so that's the funding side of it. The other side, you know, that helps to enable research, the funding does, but that's not the only thing that gets research done, because you have to be able to describe your problems in some way that the researchers can help you. And we can talk about it, and we can talk about, you know, we need X zillion, you know, bytes per year and zettaflops per whatever. We can do all that, and we do all that, you know, plenty already. But what we really need to do is provide better characterization of our problems so that the people can actually help us. And so one of the things that we've tried to do in the Petascale Data Storage Institute and in the HEC in general is hope that sites, government sites especially, but, you know, any sites that are high in computing will provide information about their problems to the research community so the research community can help. And the way we've done that is through release of data. So we've done a lot of failure data release, a lot of usage data release events, and we're starting to actually release some traces from parallel applications so that people can help us with IO and file system matters and beyond. And we also are involved a little bit in, you know, keeping track and keeping tabs on relevant standards in the area. So there's a couple in particular that we keep track of. One is PNFS, which is sort of almost out the door now, so the babysitting effort is probably about done there. And the POSIX high-end computing extensions work group, this is a work group that's a bit stalled right now, but it was about basically extending the POSIX I.O. API to allow for, you know, better uses for high-end computing. And also, one other thing that we do in this area is we work with universities in their curricula and fund students and fund programs, institutes and things like that, to basically build up file systems and IO research centers and build the strength of those centers within the university setting. So what we do in the HEC effort each year is we do this gaps analysis, and we try to figure out where there's gaps and overlaps in research going on in this file systems and IO arena. And we produce a roadmap each year for where we're at in that area. And this is an example of one of the roadmaps. And basically what you have is the projects that we know about going along the down the left, and then in sub-areas, and then we also have the years that they're funded going along in the color codes. And then on the right is, of all the HEC agencies, we vote on how important this stuff is, how much research needs to be done, and whether the research is becoming mature and needs to start rolling into commercialization. And so we try to manage this as a portfolio of investment across the government, from NSF funding research to NSA funding, you know, productization, and DOE and others. And we provide this to our, you know, to the HEC agencies, and the HEC agencies can then go easily say, well, you know, this is my interest area. I want to go fund these pieces. This is where I need to put my money. We've had some successes. We've had a lot of research come out of this this program already. But additionally, we've even had some commercial success. There's been one DOE BER. BER, no. Is that right? It's the small business DE.
SBR,
yeah. So we've had one small SBIR business formed out of this area, actually, already, and there's one other that's been applied for. So, and we know of one technology that was created that actually is going to make it into a product. But we invite vendors to come to these meetings as well so that they get an idea of what's coming out of this program that they can pick up on. And we even invite them to tell us where they're at with their research and what they want out of this community. So anyway, that's the essence of what this program does, is it tries to coordinate in a reasonable way the government expenditures across the board in this area to try to get more for our money. And this is the process that we use to do it. And these roadmaps are available. In fact, everything I've said, an abstract for all 29 projects, everything is on the web, and I'll give you that site in a minute. So additionally, like I said, we not only do we create the roadmaps for where we're at in each area, but we also create a roadmap for where we are with this assistance, enabling others. And that's what this is about, and that's updated every year as well. And this is a plug. So we've had a lot of success with our data releases. I'm on the supercomputing committee this year for systems, and we had 39 papers, and 12 of them mention our data releases. I don't know which ones of those will get accepted because that hadn't made it out yet, but that's pretty amazing that a third of the systems papers in supercomputing mention data release from some part of HEC or PDSI or something. That's a pretty good number, considering it's only been a couple of years. So basically what we've learned from this is if you give the university people some money and some data to work on, they'll go do cool things, and they have. So this is really kind of a shameless plug that for the rest of the community that aren't inside this HEC thing, I really encourage you to publish benchmarks of what you think is important. Not just micro benchmarks like we're used to, but macro benchmarks that include workflow and how you do things. I also highly encourage, you know, trying to get more traces out there, because for every trace that's out there, you're guaranteed two or three papers that are going to be published about it. And kernels, you know, kernels of I/O effort of how I/O works within codes. I know this is hard to do, but it's amazing how the payoff you get from this kind of thing. So I encourage, you know, all the sites out there that are represented to try to release as much data as you can. And here's the websites for HEC FSIO and for PDSI, or at least my part of PDSI.